Well, I think you're all going to be very happy to hear this, except maybe the translator. Story time. In fact, I'm making one section into two sessions because it's just filled with stories. And everybody likes stories. But chapter 14 ended with the series of questions being put by Yudhishthira to Arjuna. How are all the associates in Dwarka? Because they're relatives, naturally, one is asking. And they're all dear to Krishna, so another naturally, they're asking, or he's asking. And then the next section is, are the duties of a Kshatriya in discrepancy in your life, and is that why you're very distressed? And then the third conclusion is, actually both of us know, everyone knows, Krishna's gone. So that's the end of chapter 15 and 14. Chapter 15 begins with a very different kind of Arjuna than we're used to seeing or hearing about in Mahabharata. Arjuna's luster is gone. His throat is dried up. His heart is dried up. He's in such a state, he can't even speak. The intensity of his thoughts about Krishna are so strong, he can't even speak. And that's how the chapter begins. Overwhelmed. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary, describes that Arjuna, with the back of his hand, was wiping the tears that were just streaming from his eyes, and his hands were soaked, his cheeks were soaked, his eyes were soaked, his clothes were soaked. His throat was constricted so he couldn't speak. His whole body was heaving and sobbing. Arjuna, the great warrior. Suta Goswami said, Arjuna, the celebrated friend of Lord Krishna, was grief-stricken because of his strong feeling of separation from Krishna. Over and above all Maharaj Yudhisthira's speculative inquiries, mentioned some of the same things. Remembering Lord Krishna and his well wishes, benefactions, intimate familial relations, and his chariot driving, Arjuna, overwhelmed and breathing very heavily, began to speak. Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, text 41. What's 10th chapter? Opulences of the Absolute. So the final section of the 10th chapter is Krishna is responding to Arjuna. Can you describe various ways in which we can always think of you? And so Krishna describes his opulences or vibhutis, ways in which even within this world Krishna can be thought of. And the conclusion of the chapter, Krishna says, besides all the details and details, anything specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is materially desirable is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy or spark of my splendor, as says in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada's expressing it a little differently here. An insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. This child should go somewhere. So where does power come from? It comes from the powerful. And Arjuna is recognizing that he had some power, but where did that power come from? The powerful, from Krishna. And power is given to a devotee to execute some service. When Krishna comes, he has a mission and he empowers others to assist him in that mission. And when that mission is completed, everything is also withdrawn. Krishna makes, the statement is made here, Krishna makes the manifestation. He enters within the manifestation. When he does, he causes others to come with him. And he causes others to perform activities along with him. Then Krishna withdraws himself and he withdraws the others. It's all just his potency. All the associates and their wonderful power or knowledge or strength or beauty or opulence, it's all just Krishna. Krishna's potency. And he withdraws them by his supreme will. And Krishna knows all of this perfectly, but part of the arrangement of Krishna is that he may give remembrance and he may give forgetfulness. Just like with Arjuna. Arjuna couldn't remember the previous time when he was also there when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivaswan. So Arjuna was saying, how's this? Sun god Vivaswan, you spoke. We're junior to him. He is so many hundreds of thousands of years. And we're short time. How could you spoke this knowledge previously to the sun god Vivaswan? How is that? Oh yes, I did. And you were there too. But you can't remember. So Krishna can give remembrance. Krishna can take away. Krishna is the source of everything. And in this case, Arjuna is saying, Krishna gave me some powers, incredible powers, astounding powers. Even the demigods were astounded by my powers. And Krishna took them all away. So what's the lesson? Don't be puffed up. Never become proud. The phrase that Prabhupada used is, one should never become proud of borrowed plumes. Borrowed plumes. Does that phrase mean anything here in India? People wear hats and in the hats they have a little feather. Sometimes, people do that here? Don't do that here. Sometimes they do that. it was a European fashion. So, but, you know, where's that, you know, like an ostrich feather, a whole bunch of ostrich feathers in someone's hat. You know, just... Don't be proud of borrowed plumes. Where did the plumes come from? Came from some bird. You slaughtered the bird, now you're walking around with the borrowed plumes of the bird. So, whatever it is that we have that somebody might be proud of, and tendency for pride is there in the material world, you deal a little success and you're proud of that little success. Back to our other question, why Krishna might not award something from our endeavor, he doesn't want us to become proud. And when pride can be removed from the heart, Krishna can give you everything. But if Krishna gives you a little something and there's a tendency for pride in the heart, then you become proud of the little something. Even the pauper is proud of his penny, the saying goes. So we should be sober and sane and understand whatever there is, just like the 10th chapter, text 41, Bhagavad Gita, whatever there is that's opulent in this world, it's Krishna. It's Krishna's potency. And Krishna can give it, and Krishna can take it. Next verse, Arjuna says, I have just lost him whose separation for a moment would render all the universes unfavorable and void. Like bodies without life. What's the use? Prabhupada would refer to this phrase from the Bible. What profiteth a man if he gains the whole world and loses his immortal soul? You've heard Prabhupada speak that phrase many times. People may be anxious to gain something, gain more and more and more. And if you can accumulate the whole world, what have you gained? If in the course of doing so you lose the immortal soul, and what to speak of losing Krishna. On the other hand, if you have Krishna, you can be Sudama Brahman and have nothing, or Kolavich or Sridhar, and apparently at least have nothing. But actually you have the greatest treasure. That's the real wealth. And what is the use? In the rumor I'm staying, there's one of those calendars that every day has another saying. So the saying for the 30th was, Prabhupada was speaking at a rotary function in India. And very one sentence, something to the effect that if and you're doing your business, there's one thing to be accomplished, and it's to please Krishna. If you don't accomplish that, you're simply wasting your time to the Rotary Club. Shrama evahi kevalam. So Arjuna's saying, what is the use of all of this opulence that I had? Besides, it's gone, but Krishna's gone. Having lost Krishna, I've lost everything. The world is unfavorable and void. It's like a dead body. Next, only by his merciful strength was I able to vanquish all the lusty princes assembled at the palace of King Drupad for the selection of the bridegroom. With my bow and arrow, I could pierce the fish target and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi. Mahabharata has such charm. Drupad was defeated by Arjuna. Drupad, who denied Drona, get out. But you promised, get out of here. But you're a king and I'm a Brahmin and I'm asking for charity. Get out of here. Ooh. So, Drona, he had all the military weapons of Parashuram. He could have chopped up Drupad in little pieces. But he didn't. He taught the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And then as Dakshin, there was one request. Capture Drupad and bring him here before me, captive like a slave. Actually, when he made the proposal through his brother-in-law, Kripacharya, to become the military instructor for the Kaurava dynasty, the Kauravas and the Pandavas, they're all Kauravas, he was explicit. Bhishma Dev could understand, even if he hadn't been explicit, but he was explicit. He said, When I'm done, I have a motivation. I want to ask Dakshin, and the Dakshin is, I want them to defeat Drupad. But the purpose in defeating Drupad, there was a higher purpose besides get back. It was, my dear friend, he's violated his principle of religion. He's a king, he's given his word, he's gone against his word. It'll be very, very detrimental for his well-being. His religious principles are broken. So to uphold his religious principle, I want to take that which he promised he would give. So he did it through the Pandavas. And Drupad could understand how excellent a fighter, a bowman, was Arjuna, because the whole Kaurava 100 brothers and all of their armies were defeated by Drupad while the Pandavas were waiting. And then when it was the Pandavas' turn, Arjuna alone did the whole thing. He not only defeated Drupad's army, but he, just as requested, exactly as requested, he tied him up like a common criminal and brought him in circle ropes, very much like Bali Maharaj, was humiliated in the same way. It was total humiliation. Now Drupad could understand. He didn't feel enmity towards Arjuna for that. He was impressed. Whoa. This is a fit son. A fit son-in-law. Because he wanted to again retaliate against Dronacharya. So he reigned for a big yajna, by which he would, from the yajna, receive a son. Only he got a bonus. It was not only Drishtadyumna appeared from the fire, but Draupadi appeared from the fire. So he wanted that Draupadi should marry Arjuna. So he planned a Swayambhara ceremony. But meanwhile, the intrigue of the House of Lak had taken place, and it looked like the Pandavas were killed in the House of Lak. But they weren't killed. They were through the tunnel. They were taken. And taken across the river, down the river, and distance away, and in their disguise as Brahmanas. Big shoulders, powerful arms, draped in a Brahmin's garb. So when they heard of the Swayambhara, they were curious. So they went to the Swayambhara. And also Krishna and Balaram were also there. Why were Krishna and Balaram also there? They had come all the way from Dwarka to take part in the funeral for the Pandavas, because everyone thought, except Krishna and Balaram, that they were dead. So he attended their funeral. And while the funeral was going on, this announcement of the Swayamvar of Drupad, Drupad's daughter. So Drishtadyumna announced to everybody, "Oh, assembled princes who are aspiring for the hand of my daughter in marriage, my father has arranged for this special challenge for you to all." You know the story. So, looking at the water, fire and arrow, says backwards, reflection through the wheel that's moving, and you have to make it just so it goes through the opening of the wheel, just as it's passing in the right position, and it goes through the, shoot the target up above the upper rafters of the roof of the palace. I mean, forget it. Nobody can do it. Well, two somebodies could do it. And all the men failed, and of course, Karna stepped forward and Draupadi said no. Which was appropriate, but Karna took it as inappropriate. It was as an insult, a deliberate insult. So he maintained this get back at Draupadi spirit, holding a grudge. Hey, don't hold grudges. Something happens, this quality we heard earlier this morning about forgiveness. Practice forgiveness. And when you forgive, I had this exchange with one devotee recently. Forgive means to forget. Forgive doesn't mean, oh, it's okay, but your mind still dwells on it. Because that's not forgiveness. That's external. Forgive means you forget. Like take something and throw it in the river. And when you throw something in the river, you don't plan to take it back. During one of our GBC meetings, Sridhar Maharaj had some kind of a hepatitis C, some kind of a problem with his liver. And so one of the devotees of the Chaupati temple, I think it was Krishna Chandra, I'm not sure, gave him a very special ring that's supposed to be, you know, you put the ring, stone on the ring, and it helps your liver. So we went one afternoon swimming in the Ganges. And in the current of the Ganges, the ring came off his finger. Forget it. Find a ring in the mud of the Ganges. Good luck. No, everyone was looking and looking and looking, and we realized once it's in the river, it's gone. So ceremoniously, if you're holding something in your mind, or even literally, but go to a river and throw it in the river. It's gone. And forget it. Forgiveness means it's gone. It's gone. Because it's very easy. People say, oh, forgive me. You know, they do all these bad things, nasty, nasty things, and they say, oh, please accept my apologies. Or I'm sorry. They're like, okay, because I said I'm sorry, it's okay now, right? Because I said I'm sorry. I said I'm sorry. Hare Krishna. And then they do it again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's not how we do it. And if you should, if you've made some wrong, you should very sincerely request the forgiveness of the other party. And a Vaishnava is forgiving. And forgiving means you forget. You just, it's gone. It's gone. Delete, and it's gone. Karna couldn't delete. He was holding this animosity towards the Pandavas and Arjuna in particular and Draupadi. So after the Swayamvar was won, after he was successful in piercing the target, Draupadi came and gave him the garland. And there's a very nice drama. Maybe you've seen Bhakti Marg Swami has this drama. He's put on this, oh, it's really good. He's good. A very excellent drama producer. It was performed in Mayapur and performed all over the place. He's amazing. So anyway, big battle. Battle. because the Kshatriyas, after Arjuna, who was in the dress of the garb of a Brahmin, won. No, the Kshatriyas lost. Oh, it was a big battle. So Bhima stood by the side of Arjuna, and Arjuna with his arrows and Bhima with his club, they finished everybody. Duryodhan, Karna, the whole gang. And then they went back to tell Kunti the good news. You know that story. As they were approaching the house, oh, Mother Kunti, we have good news. Arjuna has won something very, very wonderful. We want to tell you. Oh, very nice. Whatever it is, you share it amongst yourselves. It's a wife. But Mother Kunti, you said it, so we have to uphold your word, because that's those Kshatriya way. Yes, but I didn't know what it was or who it was. So how to share? Five men sharing one wife. What to do? What to do? So they went and asked Vyasadeva what to do. Vyasadeva said, it's all right. You know that story. He said, in her previous life, before she was born from the fire of the yajna of Drupad, in her previous life, she had undergone great austerities to please Lord Shiva, to have a qualified husband. So, after long austerities, finally Lord Shiva appeared before Draupadi, whatever her name was previously. And she was so stunned to see Lord Shiva, she said five times, may I have a good husband, 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 may I have a good husband. Very well, you have five good husbands. In your next life. It's already ordained, it's authorized. Vyasa said. So because Vyas said that happened. She married five husbands. That must have been a very interesting arrangement. So Arjuna is appreciating the strength that he had attained to win Draupadi's hand in the Swayamvar and to defeat all the kings right in the palace with an intense battle. Where did that strength come from? It came from my dearmost friend Krishna. Next. Because he was near me, it was possible for me to conquer with great dexterity, the powerful King Indra, the King of Heaven, along with all his demigod associates, and thus enable the fire god to devastate the Kandava forest. And only by his grace was the demon named Maya saved from the blazing Kandava forest, and thus we could build our assembly house of wonderful architectural workmanship where all the princes assembled during the performance of Rajasuya Yajna and paid due tributes. So, in this first canto, there are parallel dialogues of descriptions that are found in Mahabharata. There are some details that appear in Bhagavatam that differ from the details of Mahabharata. Can you think of some example? One example? Okay, but I'm saying a specific lila. One specific lila is what happened to the Pandavas after Krishna's departure. The Mahabharata describes the Pandavas had to see hell. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes in their self-same bodies they ascended to the spiritual world. That's a detail. That's different. So how do we process that difference of description? The difference of the short answer is because Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, we accept the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Where there's discrepancy between anything and Srimad Bhagavatam, we accept Srimad Bhagavatam because it's the absolute authority. And the other narration is there to teach us something. The something that's being taught is if there are discrepancies, even you're the Pandavas, whoever you may be, if there's discrepancies, then you take the reaction for those discrepancies. The higher understanding is the more important understanding. That is, you become an unalloyed devotee of Krishna and you're returning to the spiritual world. That unalloyed devotion will counteract any discrepancy. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mama nanyubak sadureva samantavya. Chipram bhavati dharmatma. Krishna takes care of those situations. That's our higher understanding. So, there's a very wonderful description, so many wonderful descriptions, where shortly after, Arjun was on pilgrimage. Why was Arjun on pilgrimage? He was on pilgrimage incognito, in fact, because there was a situation where the Pandavas were not yet, the House of Lack incident had happened, the Svayambhar ceremony of Draupadi happened. The Pandavas all married Draupadi, but they were still not yet ascending to the throne. And so, Queen Kunti made the following arrangement. Queen Kunti made the arrangement that each of the five sons would be with Draupadi for 1 month. And the next month, and then the next month. And when it was time for Yudhisthira to be with Draupadi, no one would enter into that residence. That was the Kunti's plan to keep peace within the family of the brothers. So on one occasion, there were some cowherd men that came running to where the Pandavas were residing with a problem. The problem was there were some dacoits that were trying to steal their cows and they wanted protection. So Arjuna immediately responded to the call for protection and went right to where his bow and arrows were. The bow and arrows were in the same room as Draupadi and Yudhisthira. He went right inside. Even though Kunti had said no, he went inside and protection came first. And he repelled the attackers and returned the cows back to the cowherdsmen and then came back with his bow and arrows and said, I violated the word of our mother, so I'm going on pilgrimage for 1 year to purify myself. And Yudhisthira's response was, you don't need to do that. Yes, you did something other than what Kunti said, but it was an emergency. There's Svadharma, there's your occupational duty, and you uphold the word of your mother, that's part of your occupational duty. But then there's emergency situation, to get the Sanskrit word. And when there's emergency, that supersedes the normal situation. And it was genuine emergency. So you don't need to undergo some purification for that. He said, no, Mother Kunti has given this word, and so I have to purify myself. He just went. So while he was on pilgrimage, many things happened, but one of those things that happened was his marriage with Subhadra, because he went to Dwarka. And when he went to Dwarka on pilgrimage, he wanted to see Krishna. But he was in this incognito position, but Krishna knew. And he became very attracted to Subhadra, you know, the marriage of Arjuna and Subhadra. So after the marriage took place in Dwarka, Subhadra was then taken by Arjuna to come back to Indraprastha. Mahabharata describes when Arjuna came back after his marriage to Subhadra, Draupadi wouldn't talk to him. He wouldn't look at him. She just said, well, I hope you're happy. I hear you have a new wife. Very nice. But Draupadi. And he tried to pacify her and she wouldn't be pacified. So Arjuna told the whole thing to Subhadra and said, I want you to help me pacify Draupadi. She'll be all right. Take the position of a milkmaid of Vrindavan. Dress up like a cowherd girl. Go ahead. Dress up like a cowherd girl. And go before Draupadi. She doesn't know who you are. She hasn't seen you yet. And just tell her, I've come here to be your servant. Please give me some service to do. And your purity and simplicity and your wonderful qualities will melt the heart of Draupadi. So she did that. She dressed up like a village girl and came to Draupadi. And her the charm. This is Subhadra. Draupadi was so moved by the wonderful qualities of Subhadra. She said, surely you will receive good fortune in your life. You will marry a very qualified husband and have a hero of a son. What is your name? Oh, I'm Subhadra. the sister of Balaram and Krishna. And I'm married to the same person you are. And thank you for the benediction that I'll have a qualified son. Her heart was already softened. So she was very happy. And they spent days together because Draupadi just wanted to hear all about Krishna. And Subhadra knew all about Krishna. So she just was so happy hearing Krishna Katha from Subhadra. Imagine what that was like. Whew. So, meanwhile, Krishna came because he had come from Dwarka with gifts for the Pandava family as dowry. And the list is huge. I mean, 1,000 elephants. What do you do with 1,000 elephants anyways? And so many golden chariots with celestial horses with gold bridles. And so many jewels, and the description, without the detail, the description was, it was like a sea that you didn't see the end to it, just like standing at the edge of the ocean, looking over all the vast wealth that was all being presented to Yudhisthira, to the royal family. So Krishna and Arjuna were very happy spending some time together once again. Arjuna made the proposal, let us go by the lake, or no, by the river. By the river there's many very nice summer cottages and you'll be very pleased. Let us go. So they were sitting by the side, just at the edge of the forest, on an ivory bench, just enjoying one another's company. And from out of the forest came a very tall, majestic Brahman. He was radiant, apparently from his austerities. His beard and his hair was of golden color. It was practically blinding to look at him. So immediately Krishna and Arjuna stood up and said, "My dear sir, Brahman, is there something we can do to serve you? You've come here out of the forest. There must be some reason you're wanting some service from us." He said, "Yes, I am very hungry and I would like you to feed me." They said, "Well, we have the royal palace. Tell us what you would like and we'll supply whatever it is." He said, no, not that kind of food. I have a different kind of food. I want to eat the forest." "What do you want to eat a forest for?" Said, "My name is Agni, and I have an illness from overindulgence in ghee. There's one great king whose name is Swetaki," S-W-E-T-A-K-I for our translator. "And he did such a huge yajna that had so much ghee. I've got indigestion. So I went to Lord Brahma." "So what do I do, Dr. Brahma? I've got this terrible indigestion." And Brahma said, "In the Kandava forest, there are just the herbs that you need, but you have to devour the whole forest, and then your indigestion will be gone. So I went to devour the forest in fire, but every time I did, Indra came and stopped the fire. He sent torrential rain each time because he has a very close friend, a naga named Tatakshaka, inside the forest, and just to protect his dear friend, torrents of rain would come. So I went to Brahma. Oh, I still have this indigestion. What do I do? Indra keeps checking me from devouring the forest." He said, "You go to Krishna and Arjuna. Formerly they were Narayan themselves. And they're all powerful. They'll take care of your problem. Just find them and they'll help you. So here I am. I need your assistance so I can devour the Kandava forest." Here's Arjuna, Kshatriya. Someone's coming for protection. Protection from Indra, his father. Arjuna said, "I have many celestial weapons. Unfortunately, I don't have an appropriate bow to fire those celestial weapons. If you can provide the following three things, surely with Krishna on my side, we will be able to fulfill your desire. I need a suitable bow to fire these celestial weapons. I need a quiver that has inexhaustible supply of arrows. And I need a celestial chariot drawn by celestial horses. You provide these three things, your wish will be fulfilled. Immediately, Agni summons Varuna and Soma. The celestial chariot of Soma was brought by Varuna. The Gandiva bow was supplied to Arjuna. And two quivers with inexhaustible supply. He picked up the bow that was as tall as a man and saw its exquisite beauty and tested the strength of the bow and was very satisfied. And he approached the chariot. Krishna was very appreciative of this gesture. He said, I'll drive the chariot. You can sit in the back. Now we'll just let Agni go ahead and begin devouring the Khandava forest. A scene ensued for 11 days when the forest was ravaging with fire. And there were so many animals and beings and creatures and birds and all types of entities that were living in the forest that came out. And as the celestial chariot was moving so fast, Arjuna was stopping with his arrows, all of them, from leaving. And they were being devoured. Indra saw this intense flame that, oh, Agni's up to it again. So he sent torrents of rain. Arjuna, with his unlimited supply of arrows, made a whole blanket of arrows that was like an umbrella, and it stopped the rain from coming, entering into the forest to extinguish the fire. Anyway, many details of the battle scene. Indra brought so many other weapons, and his thunderbolt weapon, and this weapon, and that weapon, and finally he brought all the demigods, each with their weapons, and they were all charging at Krishna and Arjuna, and Arjuna just himself defeated all the demigods. Indra heard a voice from the sky and said, this was ordained that Krishna and Arjuna would prevent you from entering and stopping Agni from taking the Khandava forest. So desist, because you'll never be victorious. Indra knew that this was his son. He sent some more weapons, which were just smashed, a whole mountain peak that was just burst into powder by the arrows of Arjuna. Indra was impressed. And Indra came before Arjuna and honored him for his prowess in fighting and asked if he would like a benediction. Arjuna said, I'd like all your weapons, please. And Indra said, I'll give them later. There's a plan. When the Pashupat weapon of Lord Shiva is given to you, I'll also give you all of my weapons at the same time. Agni was also wanting to give a benediction. So he gave the benediction to Arjuna, that you can travel anywhere in the entire creation, unchecked. Out of the forest came Maya Danava. Danava is a daitya. And Krishna saw Maya Danava exiting the forest, and he was being chased by Agni. And when Krishna saw Maya Danava, he knew who Maya Danava was. He was this mystic that was assisting the daityas in their diabolical work. So Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra. So on one side is Agni coming after him, and the other side was the Sudarshan Chakra coming towards him. So what did Maya Danava do? He went and surrendered to Arjuna. Protect me! You're a powerful Kshatriya. Sudarshan Chakra, do something. Only Krishna will, because he's released it, and you're his dearmost friend. So Arjuna said, surely I will protect you. Krishna, please do something with the Sudarshan Chakra. He's taking shelter of me. I have to protect him. So Krishna wanted to see Mayadhanava destroyed. But because he was so pleased by his taking shelter of Arjuna, Krishna released his Sudarshan Chakra, or withdrew his Sudarshan Chakra. And Agni was also pleased. So Mayadhanava, it's like, you know, the personality of Kali being spared by Maharaj Parikshit. Mayadhanava was, whew, that was close. Arjuna, I'd like to give you something out of my gratitude for sparing my life. I was to be burned in the fire, and Agni was chasing me, and then Sudarshan Chakra was coming, but because of you, I now have my life. I want to give something to you. Ask for anything. And Arjuna said, I don't want anything. Why don't you do something for Krishna? Whatever you do something for Krishna, that will be very pleasing to me. That's a nice devotional sentiment. Do something for Krishna. So Mayadhanava went, folded palms to Krishna. What was it? What is it that you would like that will be pleasing to Arjuna if I do it? He said, actually, you can build a very nice hall, an assembly hall for the Pandavas at Indraprastha. You go to Yudhisthira, find out what he would like for an assembly hall, and then you build it. That will be a nice service. Now there's one version that says Mayadhanava offered to Arjuna all of his knowledge of technology. Like, you know, all of his mystic powers and so on. And Arjuna looked at Krishna and Krishna went, no. That will bring the destruction of everything. Technology has a way of doing that if it's not properly handled. So Mayadhanava agreed. He said, I know just where to get the ingredients. I was building special altars of sacrifice for the Danavas, the Daityas, and I brought celestial ingredients that you cannot even find, jewels and precious stones and ore for construction of the temples, for their altars. I know just where they are, but it'll take some time. I'll go to Yudhisthira. So he got the plan from Yudhisthira. He went and got the assistance of the Yakshas and the Kinnaras and so forth. And he assembled all the material. It took him 11 months to build the palace, the assembly hall, rather, in Indraprastha. And meanwhile, Krishna took leave. Krishna and Balaram returned back to Dwarka. Took permission from Yudhisthira. Said, we've been gone for months now. We need to get back. They're missing our association. We should return. So he returned back to Dwarka. Mayadhanava, in addition to building the palace, the assembly hall at Indraprastha, he also gave a special gift to Bhima. He gave Bhima his club and told him, with his club, you will be invincible. And he gave the conch, the Devadatta conch, to Arjuna and said, when you blow this conch, it will smash the hearts of your opposition. They'll be defeated even before you begin to fight. Interesting chapter from Mahabharata. And here it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Arjuna. He's attributing his ability to do all of this single-handedly to defeat the demigods. On what basis? Krishna was right next to me. By service unto Krishna, in the presence of Krishna, anything was possible by His grace. Thus we could build our assembly house of wonderful architectural workmanship where all the princes assembled during the performance of Rajasoya Yajna and paid tributes to you. After the assembly hall was built, next came Maharaj Yudhisthira. Why did Krishna come back? So let's have a big yajna. And we'll invite Krishna as the guest of honor. So Krishna is in Dwarka. And as Krishna is in Dwarka, having wonderful association with Balaram and all the residents of Dwarka, here comes one king requesting audience with Krishna. So Krishna agrees. And the king comes before Krishna and says, Jarasandha has imprisoned 20,800 kings. And he's such a diabolical person. He's the worshipper of Kali Bhairava. And he has a big altar and he's sacrificing kings on the altar of goddess Kali. And the king sent me as their messenger asking you, please come and help. Jarasandha is so powerful. He's terrified all the kings in all directions. And they're in prison. They're kept in a cave that's like a fortress in a big mountain. And they become lean and thin and very fearful. You are a protector. Please do something. So Krishna was about to say, okay, get all of our chariots and paraphernalia ready and we'll go. He was just about to say that when another messenger came. And this second messenger was the messenger from Maharaj Yudhisthira. And the messenger from Maharaj Yudhisthira was, Maharaj Yudhisthira would like you to come and preside over his Rajasuya Yajna. Can you come? So Krishna said, he turned to Uddhava. He said, Uddhava, you're my best minister. I'm getting these two requests. What should I do? Which one of them should I do? Krishna doesn't need anybody's advice. But he was just engaging his dearmost associate, Uddhava. So what did Uddhava say? Uddhava said, it would not be right for Maharaj Yudhisthira to become to have this Rajasuya Yajna while there's still an outstanding, powerful king in the world, and that's Jarasandha. And Jarasandha, not only he's captured these so many 20,800 kings, and now you're being asked to free those kings, you need to defeat Jarasandha first. Of the two requests, take that one first, because that should be done before the Rajasuya Yajna. And if you want to know how to defeat Jarasandha, his army is too huge. And so it's not a good idea just to fight his entire army. Just fight him one-on-one. And the way to arrange that one-on-one fight, this is all Uddhava's brilliance. Bhima should dress up as a Brahmin, ask for charity, and fight him. And then defeat him. Krishna said, brilliant. Oh, Uddhava, you are such a good minister. May you always be by my side. Yes, yes, may I always be by your side. So they went to Indraprastha. And made the arrangement. Krishna explained the whole plan. So it was Yudhisthira stayed back. It was Arjun, Bhima. No, it was Yudhisthira went too. Who was the third? Oh, Krishna. Yeah, Krishna was the third. So Jarasandha, demoniac as he was known for being charitable. Even demons are charitable, but some of them are. But they have a purpose. Their purpose of charity is so they can get strength, and that strength they use in a diabolical way. So here comes Bhima. And big, powerful Arjuna and Krishna, dressed as Brahmins, asking for charity. Jarasandha saying, I've never seen Brahmins like you guys before. You have the build of powerful warriors. But in any case, even if you are powerful warriors, you come in the dress of a Brahmin and I'm charitable to Brahmins, whatever it is that you'd like. We have one request. Just one request. We'd like to fight you. Oh, just as I thought. You are Krishna, and you are Arjuna, and you are Bhima in disguise. Well, I'll tell you, Krishna is a coward. I won't fight him. And Arjuna, he's inferior. But Bhima, he's a suitable candidate. I'll fight Bhima. So the fight went on for 100 days. Finally, Krishna indicated when Bhima was just at a point of it, because they were equally matched. If you know how powerful Bhima was, imagine how powerful Jarasandha was, equally powerful. So Krishna took the twig with a fork in it and just broke it so he could understand the signal was rip him into two. So in the purport here, Prabhupada gives the history of Jarasandha. And Jarasandha was given the name because he was born in two parts. Here's how the story goes. Jarasandha was the king of the Magadha province or state. Magadha state is today's what is it? Where? Where's Ranchi? Jarasandha? Jharkhand. Yeah, the other, what was before G was Jharkhand? Bihar. There we go. Bihar. Today's Bihar is yesterday's Magadha. And the father of Jarasandha was Brihadrath. And Brihadrath was very, very powerful king in Bihar, in Magadha. And he had two queens. They were daughters of the king of Kashi. But as fate would have it, there were no sons. And so he decided with his queens he would go to the forest and undergo austerities to help qualify themselves to have sons. While they were in the forest, they met one rishi. The rishi's name was Kaushika, Chandra Kaushika. And Chandra Kaushika gave them a benediction. Here's one mango. Divide it between your two wives and soon they will have pregnancies. So Brihadrath was very happy. And sure enough, after some time, both queens became pregnant. So Brihadrath went out of the forest back to his palace, but much to his surprise, when the two children were born, they were each a half. So he thought he was tricked by Kaushika. So he took the one half and the other half and threw them in the forest. So one forest-dwelling Rakshasi found the two halves and thought, yummy, dinner. But then she was just curious and she took the two halves and put them together and one body was formed. So she was so amazed, took the body of the child that was now in one whole back to the king, Brihadrath. And Brihadrath wanted to reward Jara. She said, I just want one benediction. You name him after me. Jara Sunda. So it became known as Jara Sunda. Prabhupada writes in the purport that this Jara Sunda was born as one of the parts and parcels of the demon Viprachitti. No information, Viprachitti. Previously Viprachitti, now Jarasandha. And he was practically invincible, except for this one thing. And so when he was ripped into two pieces, one leg and the other leg, and the end of Jarasandha by the great hero Bhima. And after Jarasandha was killed, Krishna then went to that place where the 20,800 kings were imprisoned. And he went, when he entered into the prison, they looked terrible. They were powerful kings, but they were now pale and weak, and it was a terrible sight to see. They were mean, and their previous valor was just gone. They worshipped Krishna. They offered very, very beautiful prayers to Krishna. And Krishna freed them from their shackles, gave them his benediction, and sent them back to their kingdoms. Very beautiful scene from Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Krishna went back to Indraprastha to commence the Rajasuya Yajna, followed by the demise of Shishupal during the Rajasuya Yajna. But Krishna's pastimes are just a continuous cascading of wonderful lila enacted to attract the hearts and the minds of all souls, especially Arjuna. Here he's remembering that all these incidents of how powerful was the protection of Krishna. Even those like himself who were to give protection were only able to give whatever protection because of the power of Krishna. And now he's gone. And that power is also gone. His life is vacant. But his consciousness is absorbed in thought of Krishna. So we're trying to absorb our thought in Krishna also by describing these wonderful pastimes, following Arjuna's thoughts of Krishna. Hare Krishna. No question?
Maharaj, in the morning session you said that the Grihastha should give charity. And in Srila Prabhupada's books we find that Prabhupada said that charity should be given to Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to propagate Krishna consciousness. But we hear that in previous, like in scriptures, even the great devotees, they were giving charity to like poor person or something. not exactly like to Brahmanas only and to Vaishnavas. So, like, when we come in contact with some very poor person or those who are physically very disabled, so should we give them or is it?
Give them prasadam. There's many instructions, but one instruction, just Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's story. One time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was doing his Braj Parikrama, and they were at Radhakund. And as they were walking around Radhakund, there were the widows with their begging bowls. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was with some very wealthy businessmen. And they just kept walking. And Bhaktisiddhanta stopped and said, "You are thinking, now that you are a Vaishnav, you are above Karmakanda ritual. But these are Vaishnavas. It's your duty as grihasthas to assist them." So, the injunctions for Karmakanda rituals are as you described. The charitable king or the charitable sponsor of some yajna is to distribute to everybody. In this way, the king maintains the sudras by giving in charity. But the charity that's given, Prabhupada, is very specific. The charity is used garments. It's specific. And you give, there's another prohibition. You give money to a shudra, and how will they use it? They'll use it for shudra activity, intoxication, something. They'll give them prasadam. Or, like here in Vrindavan, there are widows. And so one of the Food for Life programs is they specifically give them prasadam, give them blankets in the winter. But not just give them money. Yeah. So one has to be very thoughtful about how to give charity, and it's not the Karmakanda way. Be charitable in a Krishna conscious way. There's more detail, but that's a principle. So the recipient of charity should be the qualified person. And if there's charity given to someone that's not a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, it should be appropriate charity. Ideally, something that will bring spiritual benefit. Is that right?
She's saying that you had said that forgiveness is a very great quality, and forgiveness means we should forget. There are certain incidences in my life where things have happened and I am unable to forget them, nor I am unable to forgive. So what should I do in these circumstances?
There's a saying that if you could understand, if one can understand the suffering of another person, and from the suffering of the other person, the bad action coming out of that suffering of the other person, you can easily forgive them. We often don't know what the suffering of the other person is. We don't have access to that. Therefore, if we did, we could easily forgive them. But part of the problem is we're so much caught up in our own autobiography that we don't take the time to consider what's happening with the other person. That's one answer. Same answer, say it the other way around. Supposing there's something that you have done that is causing another person some unhappiness or grief. What would you like? You would like that other person to forgive you. There's a very nice story, not story, a nice historical event that took place in the case of Jayadev Goswami. You know Jayadev Goswami? Keshavadrita, Jayajagadisha. As Das Avatar Stotra, he's the author, Jayadev Goswami. It's part of Gita Govinda. It's a book that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear regularly. So it's very elevated literature, very elevated personality. We're not very elevated, but we can think of elevated personalities. He had a deity of Radha Madhava. Did you come with us to Jaipur? No? The original deity of Jayadev Goswami are in Jaipur, Radha Madhava. He was worshipping Radha Madhava with great devotion. One time, he wanted to have a festival. Or on a festival day, he wanted to make some special festival arrangements for his deity. So he requested his wife, "You tend to the deity. I'm going to go here and there, reciting Gita Govinda. And when people make contributions for Gita Govinda, I'll use it for the deity, for a festival for the deity." So he had gone here and there and had enough for the festival. He was coming back. He was attacked by robbers, dacoits. They plundered him and cut him with their weapons and threw him down at the bottom of a well. Very vicious act. And he was just calling out Krishna's names from the bottom of the well. Days passed, and one king was passing by and heard the sound, came to the edge of the well, looked inside the well and saw this person at the bottom of the well and had him brought out from the well, took him to his palace, gave medical treatment to him, and Jayadev, in reciprocation with the king, began to speak and sing Gita Govinda. The king was amazed that this person is a saint. So he began inquiring about, "What were you doing, you're a saint, what were you doing at the bottom of the well?" He said, he told the whole story. "I had some wealth, I had some contributions, I was coming back for a festival for my deity." "Oh, you have a deity. And who's taking care of the deity? My wife. Oh, you have a wife. Let's have a festival here for your deity in honor of Radha Madhava. We'll arrange for Padmavati, was his wife. We'll arrange for Padmavati to come. Big festival. In the course of the big festival, the king was giving away charity. The dacoits heard, oh, the king is giving away charity. We'll dress up as Brahmins and receive some charity from the king. When they were in the audience receiving charity, Jayadev recognized the dacoits. So he said something to the king. The dacoits thought, oh, he's telling, we're the ones. So they ran. What Jayadev had told the king was to make sure they receive extra contribution. And when they ran, he said, the king, make sure they catch them. Make sure that they receive sufficient wealth. So the king sent his police or his, you know, his government officers to go follow them. They're running and just following. And then they halt, halt, stop, stop. And they caught them. And they said, the king wanted you to receive this wealth before you went away. And they said, well, do you know who that person that you're holding this festival for? And they told some vicious story, an untruthful, vicious story about Jayadev. And right before their eyes, the earth opened up and swallowed the dacoits, and they were gone. So the government officers went back and reported this to the police. Excuse me, reported to the king. And the king's saying, what's going on? Jayadev, did you hear what happened? And Jayadev, do you know the whole story behind this? What's going on? And he told the whole story. He said, actually, they were the ones that had robbed me, plundered me, and cut me. And they, you know, to bring my death and sent me in the bottom of the well. But how can one be dear to the Lord without being a well-wisher of those who are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord? If the Lord, obviously the Lord has had his own will, the Lord took care of that. But from my side, or from our side, how can we be but anything but well-wishers to others? Because what has caused these men to do those bad things? There must be something, great pain and suffering in their life to bring them to do these bad things. Therefore, I wanted to see that they got proper wealth so they wouldn't have to do those bad things. But if the Lord has his own plan, that's an example of that consciousness. That's a very high level of consciousness, but that's Jayadev Goswami consciousness. Another approach, a completely different approach, is the say yes to Krishna approach. Say yes to Krishna. Okay. Well, say yes to Krishna. You know what yes means. Yes to Krishna. So, everything that we're going along in life, and here comes this, and here comes that, here comes another thing, and we're servants of Krishna, we're part and parcel of Krishna. this is happening, that is happening. So we just have to say yes to Krishna. There's some purification, some lesson, something that's coming from Krishna to me in everything that happens. So just start with that. Say yes to Krishna. I don't know what Krishna's plan is, but it's yes. I accept. And instead of saying, because we do like this to the instrument, we're doing like this to Krishna. Another way of saying the same thing, Prabhupada said to Peter Burwash, a very nice devotee, Prabhupada Anuga, never blame the instrument for your karma. Here's a stick. Hey, stick, why'd you do that? Well, the stick didn't do anything. The stick was in the hand of someone. So someone may be the instrument, the stick, danda, of karma. Don't blame the danda. Who is on the other side of the danda? Krishna. Maya dukshena prakriti. So we say yes to Krishna. Yes. There's duality, dvandva, duality. Sometimes it's cold. In Vrindavan in the winter it's very cold. Sometimes it's very hot. Duality. You say, yes, yes, yes. Hot, cold. You know the verse from Bhagavad Gita. We have to tolerate those things. Matras parshastu kaunte asitoshna sukadukada agama payonishas tongues titiksha. But higher than titiksha is say yes. It's duality. That's not who I am. This hot, cold, pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor. Someone's caused me hurt. Someone's caused me happiness. I like the person who caused me happiness. I don't like the person that's caused me hurt. No, that's duality. Dvandva mohina bharata. Behind is Krishna. Say yes to Krishna. We did this in, we had a 3-day seminar in Gita Nagari to address this one question that you're asking. And everybody got a say yes to Krishna button. And one of the exercises, they had flip charts. You know what those are? Flip charts. Big pieces of paper. Big piece of paper. Okay. One person was writing. Everybody in the audience, say, what are those things you don't like? Oh, it was a long list. 6-7 pages. I don't like it. Okay, next. I don't like it. Everyone was laughing and laughing because the lists were so long. Okay, I think we have a good long set of 7 pages of I don't likes. Now how to change I don't like into say yes to Krishna. That was the lesson, the exercise. know, your friend says, I don't like your sorry. You forgot to put your tilak on or something, you know. How come you look angry at me?
I don't know.
Or something. No, it said we did role play. You know, someone says something nasty to another person and how to respond to it. How to say, I don't like it, and how to say yes to Krishna. How do you take something that's unpleasant and say yes to Krishna? And it changes the whole dynamic. Everything becomes different. By saying yes to Krishna, you see the world altogether differently. Good. Okay, there's two written questions. They're both nice. If we forgive somebody for his mistakes, and after forgiveness he again commits same mistake, then what to do? And there's many things. One is, depends what the mistake is. Another is, what about us? Do we make mistakes? And then apologize for the mistake and then make the same mistake? Happens all the time, right? So, what should somebody feel about our making mistakes that we do again and again? At least twice. It very much depends upon the sincerity of the individual to try to correct the mistake. Prabhupada, a third point is that Prabhupada spoke about mistakes that are repeated. He said, one time, okay. Two times, okay. Three times, that's enough. Of course, that depends on the circumstance. But you know, it's not okay. You just continue to do, or someone continues to do, it's not okay. So, and possibly, depends upon the, you know, severity of this mistake, but you can just expect this person is going to continue to make the mistake, and you don't hold an expectation. You hold an expectation that's here. The hurt is you're expecting this. And it's this. And if your mood is not only forgiving but service, then you can try to consider how you can help the person grow. I know lots of devotees. I have disciples that make mistakes. what know what to do when they make the mistake and make the mistake and make the mistake. What do? Just go, forget it. Can't do that. You have to continue to help them grow. So if you're a friend, or it's somebody you know, or even somebody you don't know, somebody you just see, you can be their well-wisher, even from a distance. You can pray for them. Or, if you have the capacity, you can try to do something that will help them. But if you hold on to some negative feeling, look, they did it again and again, you have some bad feeling, then that's your problem. their problem becomes your problem. That's not good. So be forgiving. And as much as you can, try to help the situation.
There's the Hindi
question. Last question. Arjuna was a disciple, friend, and devotee of Lord Krishna. The first one who heard the Bhagavad Gita from the Lord himself in this parampara, he accepted the Gita in its entirety, so he is not in the disciplic succession. Why? Answer. False premise. The premise of the question is that he's the first one who heard the Bhagavad Gita from the Lord himself in this parampara. Well, that's a false premise. There are four current disciplic successions, and our disciplic succession is Brahma, Madhva, Mahaprabhu, and that's our line. So that's not the line that Arjuna heard from. There's the Sri Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya, the Kumara Sampradaya also. That's also not the line which Arjuna heard from or was part of. There were Krishna spoke to the sun god Devaswan, Devaswan to Manu, Manu Ikshvaku, and that's another line. But that was broken. And that's a different, slightly different kind of a method of disciplic succession. That was Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Kshatriya line, type of a line. And it doesn't specifically say, at least I'm unaware of, when Arjuna received that knowledge from Krishna, who did Arjuna pass it on to? There's no description that I'm aware of that. But that's a different line of kings receiving transcendental knowledge. Our line, why Arjuna is not mentioned in our line, is our line is Brahma Madhva Gaudiya, and that's our line. The line of the acharyas. Doesn't mean that, let's say, Ramanujacharya, he's not in our line, so it's not bona fide. It's a bona fide line, but it's just not our line.